Our next presenter is the president and CEO of the Alaska Oil and Gas Association. We're fortunate to have Kara Moriarty with us today. She came to Alaska from her home state of South Dakota to teach elementary school in one of the villages up near the North Slope. After working in Washington, D.C., she moved back to Alaska and lived in Fairbanks for 7 years. She was a staffer for Gary Wilkins. She was the president and CEO of the Fairbanks Chamber, has been on board at AOGA since 2012. She was also a 2003 recipient of the top 40 under 40. I think she told me she got it when she was like 19 or something. So if you're doing the math, She also is an honorary Iceman at Eielson Air Force Base and a member of the Downtown Rotary Club of Anchorage. And serves on the executive committee for the Resource Development Council. Let's give a nice warm welcome to Kara Moriarty. Kara?
Tim's giving me a hard time about drinking double-fisted since I brought my tea and my water up here. So, well, thank you so much for the invitation to come back to you. I was there last year at the Challenger Center and the year before that, and when we were in the mall, I guess. So it's always great to connect. I think it's a great time of year to talk about what the economic outlook is. We've just gotten through the holidays. We're all back in the grind of work. The legislature's right around the corner. So we look forward to sharing some information with you today about the oil and gas industry. Before I forget, we have a new staff member at AOGA, and he's here today, Brandon Brzezinski. Brandon is our new external affairs manager. So if you ever can't get a hold of me, he's the guy you should try to get a hold of. So thank you, Brandon, for being here. So I have about 20 some slides that I'm going to try and run through pretty briefly, but I should learn from Alyssa because she is always so creative in creating themes and rolling in the jokes in between so you remember the data. I didn't do any of that. So what I'm hoping, though, that you take away are some of these key facts. So our production today statewide, so Cook Inlet and North Slope combined, is right around 540,000 barrels a day. And I will share with you why that's important a few slides later. Even in this lower price environment, and 68, 67, is still much lower than where we were in 2013, 2014. We're still 65 to 75% of the state's unrestricted general fund, or the way I like to talk about that is the checkbook. And now, that doesn't make up 65 to 75% of the budget anymore, but it is still 65 to 75% of the state's unrestricted revenue. We still have a lot of oil left in Alaska. That's a really good thing. We're still the largest taxpayer in the state. And we have a lot of oil, but it is challenging and expensive to produce, which is not new in Alaska. It's just sort of a good reminder. So the best news of all, which is this is not fake news. It's one of the most underreported items, I think. And that is North Slope oil production has been up not 1 year, but 2 years in a row, both fiscal year from July 1st to June 30th, as well as calendar year. So the state tracks production on the fiscal year. Alyeska Pipeline Service Company tracks production on calendar year. And in both of those windows, if you will, we have had two increases in a row, and we are on track for fiscal year 18, which we're in right now. It'll end in June 30. We're scheduled for another increase. And that really is remarkable. The last time we've had an increase before these last couple of years was in 2000 when the Alpine field came online. But unlike Alpine, and this chart's a little hard to see, but what this shows you, DNR shared this chart a few months ago back in October, is that the increase is not coming from just one new field like Alpine. It's coming from lots of fields. And it's coming from the new fields that you hear about. And it's coming from the legacy fields. The biggest bar that you see, that's Prudhoe Bay. Prudhoe Bay has almost leveled its production, or about a 1% decline. It's about flat, which is pretty remarkable considering Prudhoe Bay is a 40-year-old field now, and they have become much more efficient in their drilling operations, and so it is really remarkable. The increase in production has also changed the outlook and the forecast, which is important because that's what the state is planning their oil portion of their future on, is on this chart. And what this chart shows you is the line that's going down. That was the fall forecast from just about 14 months ago. And so 14 months ago, the forecast was, they thought that maybe this blip in, or this increase in production was a one-time anomaly. Now they're thinking it could be a trend because we're becoming more efficient in how we operate and we're getting some of these newer fields online, all of that combined. So now if you look at the forecast from just last month or a couple months ago, you will see, and they're not quite sure, you know, they have like the low, medium, and high estimate. But even if you take the median, the mid-range level, even in 14 months, the forecast has changed from being about 350,000 barrels a day 10 years from now to right around this, still around this 500,000 barrels a day. And that's a huge difference. And really kudos to the industry. But the reality is times are still very challenging. Alyssa shared with you the job numbers, so I don't need to go through that specifically, but I'm going to share a story with you. So these pictures are kind of grainy. They're from my camera, taken out the bus window on the North Slope the first week of August when we went up and we did a legislative tour. And the red trucks on the left, those are all Halliburton trucks. And we visited the Halliburton facility. Halliburton in February of 2015. Now remember, this story really coincides, and I did not work with Alyssa ahead of time, but remember when she had that slide that showed you the oil jobs were really starting to hit and started to go down around 15? So February of 15, Halliburton had over 600 Alaska-based employees. February of 2017, they had 300. And, you know, he said, look, Halliburton's a huge company. Those 300 people, if they wanted a job with our company, we were able to find most of them jobs, but they were having to move all around the globe. If people wanted to stay in Alaska, they just had to leave the company. And he said, and really, if the oil business continues to dry up for us in Alaska, Halliburton, the company, will be fine because they're a huge global company. But the companies that will suffer are that next level company, because all of those red trucks are repainted every 12 to 18 months. Halliburton red, we all know Halliburton's red. All of that gets repainted, all their North Slope equipment gets repainted by a small business that employs about 20 people in Fairbanks. And Halliburton is their anchor client. So who else in Alaska is going to have that level of equipment for those 20 people in Fairbanks to repaint every 12 to 18 months? That's the challenge, is that next trickle down. The other picture, and it was rainy and miserable that day, that didn't add to the beauty of the picture, is these were the stacked rigs of, those were all neighbors' rigs that were stacked when we were up there. Even though we've got a little more production, TAP still has a lot of room left. We're at 25% of capacity still. It's a 2 million barrel a day pipeline that, of course, has been operating for 40 years and 6 months. So we celebrated our 40th anniversary about 6 months ago. But the good news is not only do we have room in the pipe for more oil, we have a tremendous opportunity for more oil. And this slide shows the historical production, that's the dark blue, and then the forecast, and this was based on the old data. We have not updated this slide since the revised forecast, so that's sort of the dark gray. But the shades of that kind of that peak up, that's if some of these new projects and new discoveries come online, and this does not include anything from ANWR and does not include anything from the OCS, which I'll talk about, because that's really the next generation of oil and gas anyway. But the future could be absolutely amazing if we could get some of our discoveries that we know online in the next 10 years. One of our challenges in Alaska, however, has been the constant churn in tax law. So this chart shows you the 7 changes that we've experienced in the last 12 years, starting with a regulatory decision under the Murkowski administration, all the way to House Bill 111 that was just passed about 6-7 months ago. And you can see, I mean, some legislators will say, well, you know, the industry wanted all of these changes. The reality is we opposed all of them except 2. And even though we supported Senate Bill 21, there were portions of that bill that we did not completely agree with. So when you hear that Senate Bill 21 was written by industry, that is not accurate. I can guarantee you we did not write Senate Bill 21. And all of them, except for 2, have been a tax increase. And Senate Bill 21, actually in this price environment, is a tax increase. We pay more today under Senate Bill 21 than we would have under the previous system, which was known as ACEs, because there is a floor. We switched to a gross tax, and I'm not going to get into the details. I can afterwards. But just so you know, that was the trade-off, that we were going to get to keep more at high oil prices when prices were 80 and above, and the state was going to get to keep more at lower prices. Now, it doesn't feel like the state's keeping more when we have a $2.5 billion plus budget deficit, but the reality is the state is generating more, especially when oil goes down to 40, and let's hope that doesn't happen again. We have, we've always had to be competitive across the nation and across the globe. Oil, Alaska is not the only place in the world that has oil. But what this heat map, type heat map shows is what the energy potential is in BTUs. So this is everything. This is coal. This is, you know, it's wind, it's solar, it's oil and gas, of where the energy potential is across the country. And it's just to illustrate another reason why Alaska has to do whatever it can to be competitive, to attract those energy dollars and investments to Alaska. As I said, we still have a lot of rock. We have a lot of oil and gas potential. And fortunately, I was, with Brandon's help, he's been on the job for 2.5 days. With Brandon's help, we were able to update this slide on Monday. And if you look at the left-hand side, that's the state resource potential. What we think is left here in Cook Inlet on state land, what we think is in conventional oil and gas, although we still need to update this slide because we have not updated it since the recent discoveries by ConocoPhillips and Armstrong and Kalis. So there's probably more recoverable resource in conventional North Slope than when we put this slide together based on state data a few years ago. But the more interesting slide and the interesting portion is right in the middle on the right-hand side. And right before Christmas, I can't remember the date, like the middle of December, the USGS updated the reserve estimates for the National Petroleum Reserve Alaska. If I had shared this slide with you a year ago, it would have said just under 1 billion barrels of oil potential. Today, that number is 8.8 billion barrels of oil. So why the dramatic shift from the Obama administration to this current administration in a reserve estimate? I don't think it has so much to do with the who's sitting in the White House, and has everything to do with what has happened on state land right next door to MPRA. That's where companies like ConocoPhillips has discovered a field called Willow that could be anywhere from 100 to 120,000 barrels a day. It's right next to where Armstrong has made a huge discovery in the Pica unit that could be 120,000 barrels a day. There is another prospect. It's where Kalis's Nuna project is. And you also have Smith Bay now in the north that has been discovered, which could be a 200,000 barrel a day field if brought online. So the geologists are now rethinking, because the dinosaurs didn't care if it was federal or state land when they died. So the geologists are now thinking, oh, wait a second. This vein, this area of resource is probably much bigger thanks to those recent discoveries, which were really brought to you by the tax incentives that were created both in ACES and Senate Bill 21. So, Ryan. Total reserves. These are the average. So it's the mean of the reserves. So the actual reserve estimates for ANWR, for example, are closer to 16 to 17. But the mean is about 10. So we try to use the average. So speaking of Smith Bay, as I mentioned, it could be a huge field. They have delayed further exploration for the time being. But based on the exploration wells that were created, the yellow, it's not a planet, the yellow circle represents what the resource potential could be compared to Kuparik, which is the other larger size circle on that map. And then Pluto, of course, is still the big elephant giant field. But remember this in your brain when I talk about ANWR here in a few minutes. So see that big circle? That's Pluto. When Pluto was discovered, they thought it would be 8 billion barrels of recoverable oil. We have produced over 12 billion in counting, and we think the total recoverable now is closer to 14 billion. So just remember that when I talk about ANWR. Kalis has a near-term project called Nuna, which is close to their current development called Ugarit. It could be a 10 to 15,000 barrel a day field. That project is shovel ready, if you will. The seismic's been done, the exploration's been done, the pad's been built, but they're waiting for a little bit more stability. They are one of the companies that are holding several $100 million in tax credit certificates that are owed to them and yet to be paid by the state. And if they could bring that online, it's about a 10 to 15,000 barrel a day field, and it's a $1 billion project. And this is a prospect because where this is requires a lot of hydraulic fracturing, which we've been using in Alaska for 50 years. But that is the type of activity. So for example, like Halliburton, one of the things that was just sitting around in their workshop was all this hydraulic fracturing material, the proppant that's used, and the machines used for that project or for that type of activity. And so when these types of projects take a back seat, that's what really hurt Halliburton's workforce on the North Slope. This is the PICA unit, as I mentioned. So again, dinosaurs don't care, but just so you know, the green is MPRA, and then the white is state land, and the highlighted pink is that's where the PICA unit is, which Armstrong and Repsol, and now a new company to Alaska called Oil Search. They're an Australian company. They'll probably take over this project by February or March. That is just to give you a point of reference of where that is on the slope. I know that Chad is speaking later today, so I won't go into a lot about Hillcorp's activities, but this is another, what I call, almost shovel ready. They're in the permitting process, and this is the Liberty Project. So this is in federal waters. It would be about 60,000 barrels a day, and they would build an offshore island similar to that schematic that you see on the left. And it's a really exciting project, but to get a field at 60,000 barrels a day is really significant because the newer fields like Ugarit and Nikaichuk, they're all around 10 to 15, 20,000 barrels a day. Point Thompson is about 10,000 barrels a day condensate. So to get a field like Liberty online at 60, and when your production is around 525,000 barrels a day, that is, it's more than 10%. I mean, so it could be a really great shot in the arm. We've got some other exciting things. Eni is a Italian company. They've got a small field called Nikaichuk, as I mentioned. They're looking to expand that, so they're out in federal water in that brown. That's where their leases are with Shell. And they spudded a exploration well on Christmas night, And they have a program where they plan to do 4 exploration wells between now and 2019. Glacier Oil and Gas, which of course Glacier's right here in your backyard, but they also have the Badami field on the slope. They have plans to continue to expand there. We also have some exciting news in Middle Earth, which we call the interior of Alaska. So Doyon and recently partnered with CIRI plans to continue to have exploration work there. All right, so now for the area you really care about, Cook Inlet. So Cook Inlet, you know, you know what's happening in the oil industry better than I could tell you. And again, I'm not going to rein in on Chad's parade, so I won't touch so much on Hillcorp. But as you know, Bluecrest started production from Cosmopolitan recently, and those trucks take every drop of that oil to Cameron out there at Endeavor. And all those jobs are all right here. So you have to have experienced the impact to that. And I know Bluecrest is moving forward now with trying to continue to drill. But Bluecrest is another example of those companies that earned tax credits through what was lawfully offered to them. And I don't know what the number of tax credits that are owed to Bluecrest, but the delay in that payment and full payment has really hampered their ability to continue to have consistent investment. It's a little bit fits and starts. You know, if they had not known that the tax credits weren't going to be paid right away, they probably would have maybe gotten some different financing. But now that it's been fits and starts, the financing is harder to find. And it's really, it's just sort of a calamity, if you will. And I'm not placing the blame on anyone. It's just at the time that the credits were created and we were paying them in full, the state had the money to do so. Now the state doesn't have the money, but yet we, as the industry, have $700 to $800 million collectively in tax credits that have been earned and that are not being paid. Now, moving forward, there are no more tax credits being generated for cash payment. The program moving forward is gone. So now, now the state has a situation to deal with, and the governor has proposed an idea for a repayment plan. We're still learning the details of that, so I can tell you we do not have a position at this time. We actually have a meeting with the Commissioner of Revenue Friday. I had to think, what day is today? On Friday, so that we can learn some more information about if his idea will be beneficial for us or not. So, but just so you know, it's that, you know, if you feel like Bluecrest, as I said, have been in fits and starts, if you will, a lot of it has to do with they built a model where they thought they would get 100% repayment because that's what the state had been doing in the past. And now that that's not happening, it's just caused, you know, it's still a good project. They know there's oil there. They want to be in Alaska, but it takes investment to do that. Other exciting work, as I mentioned, Glacier continues to look to expand here, and Hillcorp is now acquired some federal leases as well. So that's great news. So, Kenai Peninsula oil and gas jobs. So here's to back up some of the things Alyssa was saying. And I just summarized them in numbers. And the number of jobs in the Kenai Peninsula, all in, from 2016, these are the direct jobs, the indirect jobs to the contractor workforce, and including, you know, the job at Kalati's when I just got my tea, it's just over 5,000 jobs in the Kenai Peninsula borough, which generates over $400 million in wages. Now, that's 20% of your total employment and 25% of your total wages in the peninsula. 11.6 million is what we paid in property tax to the borough, which was 19% of the tax revenue. So pick one of those numbers. I don't care which one you remember. It's just a lot. I mean, and you are a unique community versus the communities I speak in across the state, because the Mat-Su borough, as Alyssa mentioned, they import jobs, you know, and there are a lot of slope workers that live in the Mat-Su Borough, just like they do here. But the Mat-Su Borough does not have a drop of production or any refining or any manufacturing facility in the Matanuska-Susitna Borough. You, however, you see it. It's right in your backyard. We have three generation workers now on some of those offshore platforms. And so you have a much more closer relationship to the oil and gas industry, not just because of these numbers on the slide, but because you actually can see the platforms, you can see the refinery, and not everyone in Alaska has that ability. So we have a tremendous opportunity right now for federal alignment, more so than, I don't think any of us recognized how serious the president was when he said that he wants to make America energy dominant, and the only way to do that is through Alaska. This is a picture of Secretary of Interior Ryan Zinke signing a secretarial order at our conference a few months ago, and since then it has been historic. We had the ANWR vote. Merle and I were talking on the way in, and Merle, I didn't know this until we were walking in today, that he was part, he worked with Roger Herrera giving tours on the North Slope in the 80s to try to open up ANWR. And so this was a very historic achievement. We think that ANWR could be the average from old seismic data, is anywhere from 6 to 16 billion barrels of oil. So the average is 10. Okay, remember what did I say about Prudhoe? I mean, it really, we know of no other onshore opportunity in federal land in the entire United States that could have the oil and gas potential of ANWR. And so now the federal tax bill has said, okay, Department of Interior, you have to conduct two lease sales in a 10-year period. And the person who will have to approve that lease sale and put it together is our friend Alaskan Joe Balash, who's now the Assistant Secretary for the Department of Interior. So he has a huge job in front of him because we know it needs to be done right. We know it's going to be legally challenged. But it has just been a tremendous, tremendous success. And the congressional delegation from Senator Murkowski, Senator Sullivan, and Congressman Young, they were in complete lockstep. They had a strategy. They were working very closely together. And so the next time you see any one of them, they owe, we need to thank them. And so it was really tremendous. The president last week also announced a new 5-year lease plan. So this is for offshore. And so this would cover lease sales from 2019 to 2024. He has potentially proposed 19 lease sales in Alaska, including two here in Cook Inlet. This is a draft plan. I will say I would be shocked if all 19 lease sales actually occur, but it gives us the opportunity to evaluate where the resource potential really is. The first public hearing on this lease plan will be in Anchorage in 2 weeks on the 23rd. Comments will be taken on this draft until the first week of March, and then we'll see the revised plan. There'll be another opportunity to comment, and then they will issue the final plan. So this by no means says that there'll absolutely be two federal lease sales in Cook Inlet in that 5-year period, but it's a possibility. This is where the process starts. I would be remiss if I didn't talk 1 minute about a huge threat to our industry, both on federal and state land, and that's an initiative that has yet to be certified, but we anticipate that the proponents will submit enough signatures by next week to be certified, and that we could be facing a question on the ballot of whether we want to change the entire permitting system. And there was an article in your paper this morning on the front page about this. And what I can say is that this initiative is written so broadly that it impacts, and you can see who it impacts. These are 22 organizations that wrote the Lieutenant Governor several months ago encouraging him to challenge the initiative to the Supreme Court, which he has. And there are several of us, of these 22, that are actually filing an amicus brief in support of that state decision. The Supreme Court is scheduled to hear oral arguments in April, and so we may not know until summer or even fall if the what the Supreme Court decides, if whether this is legal or not. But we view it as an unconstitutional initiative, just like the Attorney General and Lieutenant Governor has said. But the one thing that you need to know, and that I will just leave you with, is that it would absolutely impact every facet of our business. The head of AKLNG said at RDC, it would virtually shut down that LNG potential. Permitting would become very expensive, if not impossible for some areas, including just a simple culvert replacement on the North Slope, which there are 19 of, just in Prudhoe Bay alone, would require a major permit. The permit itself could cost more than the culvert replacement. And so this is a lot of time to learn about it, but I just want to let you know, we in the oil and gas industry view this as a serious threat to our ability to operate in the future. So I'll leave you with a little fun history fact. So this is the Prudhoe Bay Discovery well in the late 60s. They drilled 9 of them that were a dry hole. They almost walked away until this 10th. This was the 10th exploration well drilled in Prudhoe Bay. That led to this massive project that the workers didn't know couldn't be done. And this is a picture not of Prudhoe Bay, but of the Smith Bay Discovery well in on the north coast of Alaska. And people are saying that cannot be done because it's 200 miles from taps. It's in sensitive environment. But the reality is we have an amazing, bright opportunity and future to continue to be a strong oil and gas state. We want to continue to partner with you and be partners with nonprofits that Lori talked about, as well as just the state of Alaska. So thank you very much, and I'm happy to answer any questions that any of you might have.